Here we go. So happy 2022, Black Talk listeners. My name is Michelle Simpson, and I would like to welcome you to a new year. And although it's a new year, our mission is the same. Our objective for Black Talk is just the same. So we will be throughout the year featuring Black voices, Black thought, and vision. And to those of you who are joining us for the first time, I'd like to let you know that Black Talk represents a collaboration between the NAACP of Boulder County and KGNU. So in that spirit, I'd like to tell you about some events that are upcoming so you can put them on your calendar. And one of those events is related to the conversation we're about to engage in today. So the NAACP of Boulder County is sponsoring, as I just said, two events. One in the month of January, the other in the month of February. So on Sunday, January 16th, there will be an MLK Jr. celebration and the opening of the Withers Collection at the Dairy Arts Center. Many of you know where that is. And I'll be giving you a few more details on the tail end of the show. And on Sunday, February 27th, the NAACP of Boulder County is sponsoring the Fisk Jubilee Singers. And they will appear in Mackey Auditorium on the University of Colorado at Boulder campus. Both events are free and open to the public. And as I said, there are a few more details attached to both that I'll provide a little later on in the program, but I wanted you to get both of those on your calendar. So, speaking of the Withers Collection, how honored are we to be able to engage in a conversation with Rosalind Withers in advance of her visit to Boulder. And Ms. Rosalind, as I understand it, she will be in Boulder next week. And Absolutely. With that, I'd like to welcome you to Black Talk.
Well, thank you, Michelle.
And by way of further introduction, let me know if I have this correct. You are indeed the founder of the Withers Collection Museum and Gallery.
Yes.
Okay. Okay. And again, just another reminder, if anybody's just tuning in, the Withers Collection will be exhibited the 16th of January through the 27th of February at the Boulder Dairy Arts Center. So Ms. Rosalind, let's start at the beginning. What is Withers Collection?
Withers Collection Museum and Gallery is located at 333 Beall Street in Memphis, Tennessee. We are formed as a result of really giving the community an opportunity to know our history. And our history meaning my father, Dr. Ernest Withers, was a photojournalist, and he amassed over 1.8 million images.
Oh my gosh.
And we are on Beall Street, famous Beall Street in Memphis, to share his body of work visually. Now, our mission is very simple. It's to educate, which is what we do when people come through our doors. Preserve, which is really what the work is, because can you imagine having 1.8 million images? It's kind of mind-boggling, and it is when you see it physically. But the real challenge that we have is that in that 1.8 million images, we've only digitized less than 1%.
Oh my gosh.
Yes. So we are very happy to share his body of work with Boulder, Colorado, because he's very known, well known in certain areas of his work. And then there's some areas of his work people are not aware of. And when they get to experience it, they are just as thrilled and excited about the visual impact his craft shows the world. You know, he takes that moment in time, and he's able to really give us a snapshot of some moving moments, some iconic moments, and
of course,
just some moments that really changed the course of our history.
No, absolutely. So the Withers Collection Museum and Gallery was open to the public, if I have this correct, in 2011?
Yes.
Okay.
Absolutely. We opened in 2011.
And you mentioned in your remarks that the current location is on the storied, I can't emphasis on storied, underlying neon, Beale Street.
Yes.
And was that by happenstance or on purpose? To locate
I would say it's deliberate because the building is named after my father. It was established as the Ernest C. Withers Building in 1995. So he got the honor of knowing that his last studio was actually named after him. Mm-hmm. The city of Memphis approached our family with an interest to preserve the work that he had. And originally they had about 2,500 square feet that they wanted us to utilize to share his work. But after many visits, at the time I was living in South Florida, they ended up giving us 7,000 square feet because his last studio was kind of in the back of the building. Mm-hmm. But the public on Beale Street would not be able to really take note of it.
Okay.
So we asked for the front part of it. And it was granted to us by a gentleman by the name of John Elkington, who was managing the Beale Street property at that time.
Okay.
Close friend to my father as well. And he had a lot of respect and admiration for my dad's contribution. Mm-hmm. So I have to say thank you to him if he's listening.
So question for you, and it's by way of you really educating our listeners. I know that there are some kind of music aficionados out there that when they hear Beale Street, they think, okay, wait a minute. Yes. I know what she's talking about, but I think there are probably as many who don't. Would you mind telling us a little bit about Beale Street, giving us just a little thumbnail description of Beale Street? And again, as I said, just the very storied nature, because I often, whenever I hear Beale Street, of course, I think music, but I also think—
That is a history.
Yeah, and I also think about the novel by James Baldwin, If Beale Street Could Talk, which is one of my favorite James Baldwin books. But could you tell us a little bit more about Beale Street for those, again, who are not familiar?
Well, historically, Beale Street is the home of the blues, fathered by W.C. Handy, one of the original blues makers of that original music. Many, many greats came to really come into their recognition, and their talent was as a result of Beale Street. Beale Street was considered where a country boy like B.B. King, who came from Enobina, Mississippi, he dreamed of being recognized and getting to Memphis and to really perform on Beale Street. If you performed on Beale Street, you've made it. At least you've made it in the world of being recognized that you're talented.
Right.
Many, many performers, such as, of course, Elvis Presley is one of those that is also known to have put a big mark on Beale Street. Many entertainers made history in music. So your thought processes in terms of recognizing the correlation of music with Beale Street, that's what it's known for. Today it still is known for a lot of bands and groups that want to really make it. They do the same thing in many of the clubs that are on Beale Street. But what it has evolved to is a street very similar to Bourbon Street in New Orleans, where people just hang out and just have a good time and make memories of being in the scene of a lot of activity and music.
Got it.
It is an open bar. So you can actually carry your drinks outside, inside, everywhere. So it is legal to walk down Beale Street carrying a drink. So that's another thing that it's noted for.
Okay. You know, there's a description of the Withers Museum and Gallery that I was reading about online, and it reads as follows. Charming museum holding historically important photos, honoring civil rights and Black history. So my next question for you is, what does that description capture and what does it leave out?
Well, it captures that feel when you come inside. You know, remember I told you Beale Street's open bar?
Right.
Well, a lot of times people are hanging out on Beale Street and they have no idea when they step in, what they're stepping into when they step into our museum. And it's a reflection in history, and that history is not very pretty, but we've been noted to give people a sobering feel.
That was just the word when you were talking about the open bar. I thought, sober you right up.
Mm-hmm. So we've actually sobered some people. I mean, you could see it in plain sight because the history of imagery and photography is so powerful. And, you know, we display several categories, and that's the uniqueness of my father's work.
Right.
Is that he has multiple categories, but each of his categories, he goes into his craft very in depth. And what I mean by that, civil rights. You know, as a photojournalist, he covered the civil rights movement. One of his first assignments that was, he was sent to Money, Mississippi to cover the trial of Emmett Till.
Yeah.
And that was a very, very powerful turning point. As a matter of fact, Emmett Till's story is noted through his mom's emphasis of letting the people know what they had done to my son is what ignited.
Yeah.
And what ignited the civil rights movement. Mm-hmm. So he covered that. He covered it as a photographer, and he was the only photographer that was allowed in the courtroom. Other photographers were there, but they did not get the approval for them to actually take pictures. So those iconic pictures that were in the courtroom scene were taken by my father.
Now,
the biggest challenge we've had with his work is that he sold a lot of his rolls of film to the wire service.
Okay.
So that it could get in the media, and he didn't get the credit.
Oh, I see. Okay.
So many of the reporters, such as Simeon Booker, and a lot of the reporters that were right there, Alex Wilson, they credited him in all their writings as being the only photographer in there. And he took that shot where he pointed to where Mose Wright pointed, who took Emmett out of his bed. And that pointed image is my father's. And just recently, last year, it's not last year. We lost a whole year. 2020 is
easy. I understand. If easy.
So it was actually in 2019, we were engaged in getting clarification from Getty, because Getty Images, they carry that image through as representation of the AP Wire Service, Associated Press, that's what AP is. Mm-hmm. And in carrying that, they never gave credit to any photographer, but now credit has been given to Ernest Withers.
Oh, wonderful.
Those images. So we're excited about that. That was a big
coup. Glad to hear that. You know, the description, and I'll read it again. Charming museum holding historically important photos, honoring civil rights and Black history. And for me, when I read that, what it also leaves out is the fact that the history that is documented by your father's images is American history.
It is.
You know, it's American history.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And I agree with that totally. He's known, as I mentioned earlier, for his civil rights images, but he has other categories. He was the official photographer Stacks for two decades. Stacks had many greats to come through it. Al Green.
Isaac Hayes,
yes. Even Aretha and many others, Tina Turner, all those guys came through and performed and actually did some recording through the Stax, you know?
Exactly, exactly.
Willie Mitchell was one of the producers out of Stax that produced, even to this day, his son is producing with Bruno Mars, you know?
Oh, you're kidding!
So, yes.
I know that because I know I always associate
Uptown Funk. Mitchell. Uptown
yeah,
Funk.
And, Willie yeah. Mitchell with Al yeah. Green.
Yes,
and
with Al Green.
So I didn't realize that.
Yeah,
that
he groomed Al Green.
Yeah, he brought, the legacy goes on.
Yeah, he groomed Al Green. He brought Al Green in from Arkansas, country mm-hmm. boy,
yeah,
and groomed him through the streets of Bill Street and in his studio to be the Al Green that we know today. Love and
Robin, don't get me started talking about Al Green. We will be here all day.
I know, he's one of my favorites too. But we have many images of him. I think there is an image or two on display at the exhibition. I'm very happy to display his work because there are so many different aspects of his work. Because one of the things that we discovered when you look at the civil rights piece, there is a piece of the history that Dad shared that actually brought the integration naturally through just the professional skill sets that existed in entertainment mm-hmm. in music, entertainment in sports. And he was actually in the early 40s, he right out of the military covered the sports of many greats, iconic, such as Jackie Robinson, Satchel right. Paige.
And wasn't Willie Mays, yeah,
Charlie Pride. Young. Most people yeah. don't know Charlie Pride played baseball and was very good at it.
I recall reading something like a little tidbit about that. That yes. is wonderful. Oh my gosh. So Miss Rosalyn, tell us, you were, if I have this right, you were born and raised in Memphis, Tennessee. Is that correct?
Absolutely. That is.
And as I believe I know, you were the last of seven children. So six brothers in you?
Last of eight. Seven eight? Brothers.
Oh my gosh. I left somebody out. Apologies.
Seven boys and one girl. I'm
and
eight.
You. Okay. And you. So after your mother passed, you were named trustee yes. of the photographic collection.
Yes.
How old were you when you were named, if you don't mind my asking, when you were named trustee?
Oh, I have to calculate that, but my children were grown and gone.
Okay, and that's what I wondered. How old or young were you? Not yeah. even exactly.
My children were grown and gone.
Okay. Yeah,
I was kind of settled in my own life, really, in South Florida.
Okay.
Had taken some professional buyouts with corporations that I had worked for.
Mm-hmm.
And in doing that, I had settled. I had gone through a divorce, and then after the divorce, I had settled in South Florida, which
South Florida.
Is kind of where we raise our children as well.
How did the idea even come about, Miss Rosalyn? How did this whole museum and gallery idea come about?
You were living my family, and you know, I have to. This is probably a story that most people are not aware of. The African-American Museum of History and Culture was being planned in before my father passed away in 2007. They had actually began discussing with him in 2005, 2006, Lonnie Bunch and a team.
So you're talking now, just so everybody knows, so you're talking about the establishment of the African-American at the Smithsonian. Okay, I just wanted to make certain everybody was with us. Okay.
So that group had visited our home, and in visiting our home, they had found my father's treasure and was very interested in acquiring it for the African American of history and culture. Mm-hmm. They made one mistake, and I'll tell you about that very briefly. It's kind of a long story, but I'm gonna make it very short. But basically, they had had my father put all of his affairs in order to really work with him.
Okay.
And one of the things that they forced him to do was to put together a trust. So as a result of putting together that trust, he named my mother as the trustee in the event of my father's death. And then I would be her successor.
Got it. Okay.
That was a joint decision between my parents that would happen. Now, the interesting thing is when my mother was responsible for it and the group that was there had made a comment to my mother that they had other things that they needed to gather for the museum. And at that time in 2007, my father had passed away, and she, my mother only lived 10 months after my father. Mm-hmm. She died in 2008. But the interesting thing is that they had told her that they were having to really do other museum searches, such as artifacts and sculptures and paintings. So they were going to purchase my father's work. And my mother wanted to know, well, what are you going to do with it? And they made a mistake and told her that it was going to go in a basement until they were ready.
Got it.
And when she heard the word basement, mm-hmm. it's like, no.
Yeah, that's not happening.
Not my husband's work. It's not going in anybody's basement. So that is really what made them lose the agreement. And no matter what dollar figure that they had offered her, she was not interested in it.
She wasn't going for it. She wasn't going to go for that.
So that's how we ended up as a family owning our asset. And we still own it today.
Everyone, I hope you're listening in. We're having a wonderful conversation with Miss Rosalyn Withers, who is the founder of the Withers Collection Museum and Gallery in Memphis, Tennessee. And you are listening to KGNU 88.5 FM. Mm-hmm. KGNU goes out to listeners in Boulder, goes out to listeners in Denver, as well as Fort Collins. So, Miss Rosalyn, wow, that's very interesting. I'm glad you shared that with us. So, how familiar were you with your father's photographs when you became trustee? Now, I'm not saying, did you know he was a photographer? I don't mean that. But I mean, how familiar were, because I mean, we're talking about this enormously immense body of work. How familiar were you?
Well, my father, I must admit that he enjoyed the latter years of his life. He got to travel with his work. He had a wonderful agent by the name of Tony Deaconess out of Boston.
Okay.
And Tony really introduced my father's work into the fine art arena, mm-hmm. which gave people the unseen history of African Americans that had never really seen us in light. And I say light, meaning as really polished and beautiful people. Because another category of my dad's work is called lifestyle.
Okay.
He covered everyday life, you know, weddings, funerals, debutante balls, mm-hmm, mm-hmm. all type of social events, social activities, you know, things that existed in our day-to-day life. And we were beautiful people.
Absolutely.
Not, you know, always in a fight for life. You know, we were not desegregated. We were together. And when we were together in a unit, we strive and we thrived, not having some of the legalities of Jim Crow existing in our own communities. We supported ourselves. And
well, I love that idea. Yeah, I love that idea, though, of your dad capturing kind of the full spectrum mm-hmm. of our humanity.
Yes. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And see, that's the beauty. And we're told in education that they have no record of our history. But yes, we do. We have a lot of record of our history through the lens of Ernest Withers. And that's why I'm so excited to introduce this to the Boulder community.
Yeah. No, absolutely. Now, were you ever able to accompany your dad on any of his kind of photographic trips?
Not necessarily on his trips. And my mom gave me one day with my dad. Okay. That was on Sundays.
Okay. Okay.
That was on Sundays. And his assignment on Sundays ran from Sunday school all the way down to the end of the day to church Founders Day celebrations and singing in the choir. And from the sun up to the sundown, I think we probably would easily cover 20, 25 churches a day.
On a Sunday.
Because he had so many different things that he had to be there to cover and to take. Mm-hmm. And I was just happy being with them. That's the only day she gave me. So other than that, I would, if it was something that I was involved in with him, she was usually there and I was there because she was there.
Okay.
But the Sunday was the only day that she gave.
Sunday was your day. So let me ask you this. And you may have to speculate a little bit, but you may know. How did he decide what and or who he would photograph?
You know, he had a very unique perspective of covering and capturing the moment in time and how important that was. Mm-hmm. You know, I, you know, sometimes wonder if at least I had gotten when I first started this many questions about whether he knew what he was doing or whether he knew the importance of what he covered. And I can honestly tell you that he did. Mm-hmm. You know, in the preface of the Emmett Till booklet, he did a self-published book, and he did that in 1955. My father was 33 years old, and he wrote in the preface in the last paragraph that he was covering this event to record this injustice that took place so that it need not occur again. And he said that he was doing it not to stir up racial animosity, but for this nation to learn from it. And this was in 1955, so he was 33 years old. He's covering this trial that obviously was just unbelievable in its outcome with all the evidence that was so clear to the injustice that had taken place. And not only did they kill Emmett, the whole town covered up and tried to erase it as if it didn't happen in the face of many people who knew it did. And that's just unthinkable.
And in, you know, and Ms. Rosalyn, when we think about, again, the ramifications today, mm-hmm. And the fact that we're still having those conversations.
Exactly. And it's still occurring.
Yes, no, and that's what I was going to say. You know, that's still with us.
And it's a parallel to the world watching the death of George Floyd and everyone having an opinion and seeing it, and yet it's still taunted to be justified as if it was right. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. You know, in the face of many people who see the injustice itself, you know. So mm-hmm. yes, it's a repeat. And when we sometimes repeat things and we don't learn from them, they continue to return.
This is KGNU, Boulder, Denver, and Fort Collins.
You know what's interesting, though, as you were speaking, because I was thinking about what you were saying and thinking about your dad's intentions and this capturing mm-hmm. of history. And I was just thinking that for so many Black folks, when that videotape of George Floyd being murdered was replayed, and there's some indications it was replayed over 5,000 times on television.
More than that, I imagine.
Oh, every time you turn around. Anyway, and that it took it being, again, shown again and again and again.
In shame.
For some people to believe that it happened. Exactly. So in other words, the complaints, the allegations that Black folks had been making for years mm-hmm. had not been believed. And exactly. For many folks, that was that moment mm-hmm. of saying, oh my gosh, this is devastating. This is horrible. But for folks to believe it. And it's just interesting to me recalling what you're saying mm-hmm. in terms of Emmett Till.
So what Ernest Withers did,
yeah,
you can press the rewind button.
Yeah.
And he did the exact same thing with the booklet, the self-published booklet.
Yeah. And that's what I was thinking of.
Yeah.
You know, and that's what I was thinking about and just kind of drawing.
And he recorded it. And what was interesting in his last line, mm-hmm. he said that this publication was an individual project, not supported by any entity or any institution.
Well, solely. You mentioned he self-published.
Yeah.
Yeah. So he has
by him. So for him to even write it that way, that it was an individual. So in other words, if you're looking to hurt somebody, hurt me. Because I'm the one that did this, and it was copyrighted in him in 1955. And that it was quite courageous of an African-American man in 1955.
Oh, no, absolutely. As you say that, that's what I was reflecting on. So how did Dr. Withers, how did he come to photography? Or how did photography come to him?
His sister bought her boyfriend a Brownie camera. And he was ended up being my uncle, Uncle Harvey. He didn't want it. And you know what's funny is I didn't even know it was Uncle Harvey until his daughter was visiting the museum. And she was like, "That was Dad's camera." I was like, "That was Uncle Harvey? I thought it was a boyfriend. I didn't know it was Uncle Harvey." So it was just really funny when I discovered that. And I'm talking less than 5 years ago, I just, you know, was made aware it was Uncle Harvey. And so he didn't want it. He had no interest. Matter of fact, he was kind of mad at my aunt for giving him something he had no interest in. But my father overheard their dispute. And so he asked his sister, if he don't want it, can I have it? Can I get it? So she let him have it, you know, just out of frustration that he didn't appreciate what she had gotten, you know, him as a gift. And my father, that was the first camera that he got. And then the next step that took place was a rally at his high school, or you know, he was in junior high school, he was in the ninth grade. And the rally brought in this superstar like Halle Berry, who was known as Marva Lewis Thomas, Joe Lewis's wife, beautiful, just gorgeous, drop dead gorgeous. He was courageous enough. He was not on anybody's yearbook staff, nothing, just walked up and got a perfect picture of her. And he became the most popular kid in school. Everybody wanted a copy of that picture of Miss Marva Lewis because of her beauty, you know? So that was the bite, you know? He had something that everybody wanted, and he just wanted to be able to share that moment that everybody just loved in this image that he had taken. So that was the first bite, really, of him getting into photography. He didn't at that time know how to develop, but his development of the craft of actually developing photography, I think that improved his skills, and he got that from the Army.
Oh, I see. Okay. Huh. You know, certainly the responses and reactions to the collection, they've had to have been varied, you know, throughout the years as viewers have come in, you know, to the gallery, come into the museum. Miss Rosalind, are there one or two responses or reactions that have stayed with you? Maybe a letter you received or a comment someone made that just really kind of resonated for whatever reason?
Every time I go in, I actually stop going to the museum because I have an office in there, but I never get to work. Because if I'm sitting there doing work, every 2-3 minutes, a staff person or a person who just dropped by, somebody I was just excited to see, came by, and I never get any work done. So I was like, okay, I'm gonna have to kind of step away. But the thing that I appreciate about it is that it just reminds me of the importance of the work. So there's two things that I do when I get discouraged, because sometimes this is not an easy task. There is no roadmap that I could find even to this day to help me in getting this work to where it needs to be. I have plenty of people who want to take it, to steal it, or to do anything but our mission. And our mission is education, preservation, and share. And we find people wanting to do other things or to really remove the family from its ownership of the work. That happens too a lot in joint ventures that we really spent a long time developing, turned into a erase or an attempt to erase the family from its ownership. So those things happen in the real world. And those are things that frustrate me when I'm trying to do what's right, because no one can really share or to do the importance of what our history means to this country. And as you emphasized earlier, it's American history. Mm-hmm. So you can't erase American history.
Absolutely.
We have this reservoir that must be shared. And that's what our objective is to share it.
Well, you know, I'm going to detour, but it's not a big detour. It's not a big one. So you're coming to Colorado within a week, and you're going to be coming to Denver. Yes. And you're going to be coming to Denver to visit relatives, because you have relatives here in the state of Colorado.
I do, and I'm proud of my relatives there.
But I, you know, wonder if you wouldn't mind taking a minute or two to tell us about your Uncle Red, because I am just fascinated, as you know.
Well, I'm by sure the state of Colorado and the city of Denver is very happy and proud to have Uncle Red as a resident. He's one of the survivors of the Tulsa massacre. He was a little baby, actually. He turns 101 this upon me arriving, and I'm so thankful that I'm able to see him. And he is related to me as my uncle, because we call him Uncle Red, but he married my father's favorite cousin, Aunt Mabel. Mm-hmm. And in doing that, we united many, many years ago through family reunions, and we traveled different places in our family reunions, from DC to California to Denver. We did a family reunion in Denver as well. And we had Memphis always, and we did some cruising and family reunions, and our family, Uncle Red and Aunt Mabel and all the gang was all there, you know, in our family reunion. So I didn't know that Uncle Red was one of the survivors. It was something that I found out as I was watching the news. I was like, that's Uncle Red.
Oh my gosh. That's how you learned.
Yes, and I called my cousins, and I was like, May Lee, and I talked to all of them, and I was like, what? I just didn't know. But it brings honor to me to know that there is continuous historical legacies that are still in our family through all threads. Mm-hmm. And of course, I'm very, very honored to be a part of the family. Love my dad. They've always traveled and always stayed connected to dad's work.
No, I think that is just fascinating. I think I mentioned to you.
They're going to be at the opening too.
Oh, that's wonderful. Because I was going to say, I think I mentioned to you that I had a student in my class last semester from Oklahoma who was just a student of history, but most especially of the Tulsa massacre, sometimes referred to as the Tulsa race massacre, that took place in 1921. And we would often talk about that or reference it.
He and his sister, I mean, his sister is 107. And then there's a third. So there were the three living.
You know, so she's a young 107. Okay.
Yeah, she's 100. She was the oldest living.
Okay.
And then Uncle Red is the youngest, and there was another person that was not related to them that was also a survivor. And they received the congressional honor of, in all due respects to what they went through Congress, and what's interesting is the senator who presented them the award was out of Tennessee. Very, very dear friend of my father, Steve Cohen. And I when I watched that, I was saying, if Steve.
Oh, I even know who you're talking about. I know who you're talking about.
I said, if Steve only knew who Uncle Red was, he would tell the world. But, you know, I was looking to see if I had his number in my phone to text it to him, but I didn't have it. So I had his office number, not his cell phone.
Well, let me ask you and you've been warned. So Ms. Rosalyn, I'm warning you, it's an unfair question, but I'm asking it anyway. What one or two photos are your favorites?
That's not an unfair question. Now, my father would say, how do you know how to 5 million images? He said he had 5 million. We only found 1.8 up to this day, but he probably is right, though.
Oh, I'm sure.
But my favorite is the one that really struck me when I got this responsibility. You know, when you walk into and you see the mass of work, and it was a mess. You know, it was a lot of material everywhere, and it kind of looked like just a whole pile of stuff everywhere, and you just don't know where to start. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Thankfully, I had some good professional training from companies that I worked from Eastman Kodak to Raytheon Data Systems and then Federal Express. And all of those positions, believe it or not, brought some of the skill set that I needed in order to do some of the things that we've accomplished so far. And I'm very thankful for that. Of course, I had no idea, but as I stepped into this role, that's one of the things that I appreciated was my professional training. But I say that to say, oh goodness, you made me forget.
No, forget.
I want to answer your question. I said that to answer your question that you had asked about.
Your favorites?
My favorite. Okay, so back to my favorite. So as I went through recognizing that the body of work was so extensive, and I was in the archive, actually it wasn't even the archive at that time, it was just a room full of a whole bunch of stuff. I was looking at this image and I looked at it. Now there are two versions of it, actually it's multiple versions, but there are two noted versions. One is just the image itself that says the words, but then there's one with this lady sitting on the sign. And I was like, what? It says, no white people allowed in zoo today. When I saw that, it took me a minute. I was like, what?
Yeah,
no white people allowed in zoo today?
You had a little trouble translating that. Yeah.
And it was like that picture lifted up off that table and just slapped me in my face. So I must tell you that that's one of my favorites.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. No, understandably. Mm-hmm. Wow. Well, can you tell us, because my hope is that this conversation with you is getting some folks ready, excited, lining up at the Dairy Arts Center. This exhibit is titled Walk With Me.
Yes.
Can you give us a bit of a preview, a verbal preview? So what will we see at the Dairy Arts Center? What are we going to see? What are we coming into?
You know what? That's a brilliant title, Walk With Me. We're stepping into history in an area where, what would you say the ratio of racial diversity in terms of?
Boulder?
Uh-huh.
Oh, gee. I can't give you a ratio. The number is too small.
Okay, majority. What is the majority?
So if we're looking at Boulder, the last time I've heard a number tossed out, the Black population in Boulder is maybe about 1%.
Okay. So we're stepping into a majority of white Anglo-Saxon culture, okay? They have no idea atrocities or the life of an African-American, especially with having 1% of its population being African-American. It makes it a novelty. The title of Walk With Me is so that I can take you down this journey and have a discussion and show and tell. Not that you're going to be behind me or in front of me, but you're going to be right beside me as I explain this history to you. And I think that's a very beautiful, warm, and inviting invitation to walk.
Ms. Roplin, how often does the collection travel?
Often. We usually have at least one exhibition a quarter somewhere on the planet. And I say the planet because we've had exhibitions around the globe. France, Germany, Norway. It's been all over.
Been around. Mm-hmm. Well, let me remind our listeners again, because I promised to remind you of some of the details of what's coming up. So again, the opening mm-hmm. of the Withers collection is January 16th. And that will be accompanied by an MLK Jr. celebration. So again, that's the opening reception. And Ms. Rosalind Withers, who's been with us today, will deliver the keynote and open the exhibit. And again, that takes place on Sunday, January 16th at 1:30 p.m. The event is free and open to the public. However, registration is required. And if you visit the Dairy Arts Center site, website, and you scroll down to this particular event, you'll see how to register. So again, the exhibit opens on the 16th. It runs through the 27th of February. And the Dairy Arts Center is in Boulder. It's located at 2590 Walnut. So as we begin to wrap up, Ms. Rosalind, I wanted to ask you about just photographers and Black photographers specifically, because Black photographers are woefully, I would say tragically, underrepresented when we discuss the history of photography. Mm-hmm. And so when I look at your dad, Dr. Ernest Withers, as such an important member of that very, very small club, did he have any mentors? Did he have any coaches as a photographer?
One of my treasured photos that I found in Dad's archive, not taken by him, but it was the 90th birthday of Gordon Parks, who was in New York. It was given by a photography associated group, and forgive me if I don't remember their official title. Mm-hmm. They're out of DC, the chapter's out of DC.
Okay.
And one gentleman that I know specifically that my father was his mentor, his name was Michelob. Michelob, I think, was probably the one that was kind of key in putting this whole thing together. It was really the 90th birthday celebration of Gordon. But I have this beautiful print of all of these photographers, 90 of them, around Gordon Parks, and in the center is Ernest Withers and Gordon Parks next to each other.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah, so it's a very treasured photo.
Mm-hmm. And I'd love to see that.
I have it in my phone, so I'll be able to show you when I see it.
Would you? Because yeah. I would love to see that.
Yeah, it's a priceless piece of history. And Gordon Parks was one that I really looked to help me in my journey, but I was saddened to find out that his family don't own anything that is his to this day.
Really?
Not one stick. That was heartbreaking for me, and it was devastating. I don't think I ate for at least a week when I found that out, because I had finally reached his daughter, and she's pretty bitter about it, which she should be.
Of course. Mm-hmm.
And the world doesn't know that. There are many artists who collect his work, and it does not go back to his estate or his family. But there are some reasons behind it that I later found out, a lot stemming toward him not really doing some things that needed to be done. Mm-hmm. In behalf of his family. So some of it, you have to really look at his preparation too.
Yeah, it's still very sad.
But it's very sad. And, you know, we have a lot of superstars who collect his work, but doesn't benefit his family whatsoever.
Well, Ms. Rosalind, again, I am so, so excited and looking forward to you coming to Boulder next week. Can't wait to meet you. And spend a little bit more time with you in person. You know, I'd like to end our conversation with a quote by Roy D. Carava, who is a New York-based photographer, who is said to have mastered the documentary style of photography in the 20th century and then beyond that. And, you know, we were just talking about Black photographers. You were just talking about Gordon Parks. And something he said just really resonates, I think, with what you've shared with us. And he wrote, "There were no Black images of dignity, no images of beautiful Black people. There was this big hole. I tried to fill it."
Oh, wow. So profoundly stated. I love it.
And it just so resonates, I think, with what you have shared with us regarding Dr. Ernest Withers, your father.
You know, his words is what drives me every day, because one of the things that we face in our education is the void of being educated, knowing that we have history.
Oh, absolutely.
What is not the case is that we have record of our history. Mm-hmm. But yet we're led to believe that it doesn't exist.
Right.
So my mission is to change that. My commitment to this society is that his work will be used in education. And luckily we've made some connectivity and dots with educators and creators of curriculum, not just in the United States, also in Europe, where we're going to make his work available because education is now being revamped to be more digital, mm-hmm. and our digital content will be incorporated because they are having to recreate it. So now recreating it gives us an incorporation opportunity that we're taking advantage of across the board. Even Botanica is one of our companies that we're working with.
Oh my gosh. Mm-hmm. Well, Ms. Roslyn, again, thank you so much for your time. And I will tell you, as one Black woman to another, I am so grateful to you.
Thank you again,
this collection, for just illuminating our lives, our history, and just our personhood, you know, which so often gets overlooked. I mean, to even have to say that, mm-hmm. you know, seems... Yeah. You know, or should be redundant, but it's not. And so for that very reason, I am just so appreciative and just can't wait for next week.
I know. I can't wait to get there. I know I got to bundle up, though.
Oh, yeah, please do. But you know what? This is Colorado. So today, I think, you know, the temperature was like 13 degrees or something. When you come watch, you'll be looking for flip-flops in Walgreens. But anyway, you know, because our weather is so changeable. Everybody says that in every state, but it is true. It is true. So check in before you come, you know, for the...
I lost my breath when you said 13.
So, yeah, but prepare for like the 10-day forecast, because that can switch in a minute.
Okay.
So we always say come
13, later. Yes. Ooh, I gotta pack some real warm stuff. Okay.
I didn't mean to take your breath away, but yeah, I think that was the warmest part of the day. But on that note, again, I just want to thank you and thank you for all of Boulder, Denver, and everyone who's going to travel in to see this exhibit. As I said, we are just so humbled and honored, and as am I, for the time you took this evening with me. So thank you again.
The honor is ours to share.
Let me hear you say it. Come on, say we. Tell everybody that you know. Let me hear you say we. You too. Say we. Come on.
You've been listening to KGNU, 88.5 FM, Boulder, Denver, and Fort Collins.